You say we don't know. We say we don't know. We say Drek This Out.
And good evening and welcome back to Trek This Out. And you may have noticed that I am not Sukisa, I am Sarah, and you might recognise me from such podcasts as The Davis Flyer, or when I was, you were fortunate enough to hear my ramblings about Strange New Worlds when that launched last year. But I've been invited back to talk about Picard season 3. And tonight we're going to be thinking about the latest episode, so episode 5, Imposters. So if we meet the rest of the crew, and I shall start with Mr. Davis just because he sat next to me.
Hello. Hi. How are you, Sarah?
I'm grand. Thanks, mate.
It's lovely to be here. Thank you for inviting me on your podcast.
Thank you for sorting the washing out. That was really nice.
Oh, good grief. This is sickly. This is. Carry on, please.
All right, then, Suki, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm fine. Carry on. Let's go.
Lovely. Andrea?
I'm very well, thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah, and we were just saying it's really nice to see you both again because it has been a little while. So we were really pleased when you guys got back together for Picard. So,
hey Sarah, before you go on, did you see how they described us on the tweet asking us to be part of this? They called us a power couple. Power couple.
Power couple. Yeah. Wow. I feel like
That was me, and I had to copy and paste it off something else just to find the description.
Yeah, I definitely feel like I need more caffeine to be part of a power couple, but you know, we can sort of amble along in a, you know, slightly mediocre way, which seems to be working for us.
I'll take it.
So yes, the reason we're here then is episode 5, Imposters. So I kind of felt a bit like that this episode was a little bit of breathing space after all the action of the previous couple of episodes, with a bit of espionage thrown in for good measure, because we do love a bit of that in sci-fi. But Steve, what were your initial thoughts on the episode?
Oh, well, I thought it was a bit more action-y than that. I was impressed. Very plotty. Things kept happening. Things were moving along, rattling along. Which I think has been a bit of a theme for the series so far. Stuff just keeps happening. It's very good. I like it.
Lovely. What about you, Suki?
Yes, it was a solid episode. But the standout was the meeting between Roll and Picard. And I'm just going to tell you guys now, I had some dust in my eyes when that whole two scenes were playing out, plus the end when she decided to take the shuttle into her... into the nacelle. But yeah, solid episode, really good episode.
Yeah, and it definitely felt like an episode for the Next Gen fans, didn't it? It was really nice, just like people kept popping up, which was lovely. What about you, Andrea?
I feel like the series, we've had quite a lot of different episodes with different kind of tones. Like I talked about, I like shooty Star Trek, and we've got some shooty Star Trek. And then I had to retract my views that talky Star Trek wasn't my favourite because I thought last week was brilliant. And I think we had a mix this week of kind of a bit, it was a bit more a mystery episode, I think, with some action thrown in. But I'm still really, really, really happy and really, really positive.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely left the episode. I mean, well, I had thoughts. I left the episode just really wanting to know where the story's going to go. You know, lots of conversations around, you know, who's what and what's going to happen. And, you know, really interested to know how it's all going to play out. And as a, you know, DS9 fan, it's right up my street because it does feel like there are lots. Actually, it feels like they've done... they're really doing a good job at paying homage to TNG while introducing my favourite elements of DS9. So,
I have a question. Andrew, you like shooty Star Trek. What do you think of phasers shooting bullety things rather than big streams of light?
It feels kind of odd. Like in the first episode, when like the gun ran out, it's like that's never ever happened. This is the first gun in the entire Star Trek universe that seems to have just run out of batteries.
Yeah.
I was a little bit perturbed by that, I've got to say.
But we did say maybe because Beverly's using knockoff gear and really secondhand gear, so it might have been faulty anyway with them guns. But the shooting guns, I don't mind them shooting guns. You know, it's evolution. They've just maybe decided instead of doing streaks, they just shoot.
I think it feels a bit more violent, like with the lines of phases. It was more like Starfleet going, "Yeah, we're going to shoot you," but it's very civilized. They're more like swords, you know, give you a chance so you can see it coming. Whereas the bullets is all very Klingon-y, isn't it?
I was just going to say, from a health and safety point of view, though, if you're shooting out like killy like lasers, like if someone just happens to like appear in a corridor when they shouldn't, like they are going to get chopped in half. So from a sort of risk assessment point of view, bullets are, at least you shoot it and it's gone.
You reckon that's what did it? You reckon Starfleet Command had like a risk assessment where they went, do you know what? It's bullets. We've got to be bullets now, guys. Much safer.
Yeah, I reckon that there is a health and safety document somewhere and someone's gone around with a clipboard and gone, nah, that's not going to fly.
I was just having a think about where to go next, and I guess the beginning of the episode is probably a good place to start. So I really, really loved that initial conversation between where Shaw and Riker change command again, because Shaw he's just such a dick, but he's so amusing to watch, and he's genuinely, because you never know what he's going to do next, apart from the fact he's going to be really acerbic. You took a deep breath there, Steve.
I don't think he's a dick. I think he's an everyman. He's what like real people would be like as a captain. So like, you know, everyone likes to think they'd be Picard or Riker. No, we wouldn't be. We'd be sure. We'd all be sure.
I mean, to be fair, I think Picard's being a bit of a dick as well, but we'll come on to that. Suki?
But we've all been calling Shaw a bit of a knobhead and a dick and really a bellend and all this sort, all sorts of things, similar things. But as Steve says, he's somebody who's following the rules, and he wants to make sure everything is done correctly, because protocol is there for a reason. And if people aren't following protocol, they shouldn't really be on the bridge or anywhere near the ship. And I can understand why he's being such that sort of character, but he's such a great, as you said, he's such a great character to watch, because he does really bring humour to the episode, and he brings the conflict there as well. I just think he's absolutely brilliant. Todd Stashwick. He's just fantastic, and I've liked him ever since. I used to watch him in 12 Monkeys, which I'll bring up a bit later on.
But I think as well, it really does highlight that you kind of need all sorts of different characters. You know, just thinking back to all the different managers you've had, there's ones that you've got on well and ones that you haven't, and others that your colleagues would have the exact same opposite opinion. He did just remind me a little bit of you know that teacher at school, though, when they won't let you explain yourself and they're telling you off. And like, but sir, can I just no, off you go. Okay, fair enough. Andrea.
I think at some point, like, I don't know what scene this was, is like, I'd just written, Shaw is probably thinking, for fuck's sake, why me? Why my ship?
Yeah.
He's like, I was literally just in the wrong place at the wrong time, and he turned up, and like, I totally get it. Yes. I try to visualise our old head and old deputy just turning up and just trying to take over the school and like probably get us all killed, and you just be like, no, go away.
The thing as well is, Shaw is now coming round to Picard and Riker's point of view as to what is actually going on. He's now getting very, very aligned with their visions of what's going on, right? Whereas before, he just wanted to get shot of them. But now what he's seen, he's just thinking there's something really bad going. And he has to really go with Picard and Riker to be able to try and figure out the situation. Andrea.
I think my favourite Shaw moment in this episode was when he kind of rhymed off all those Easter eggs that were clearly for us. But he's quite right. Like, you know, he references when they crashed, like, the Enterprise of Generations. He referenced sort of what happened in Insurrection. He referenced All Good Things and that time paradox and the Devron system and stuff. So he clearly knows who these guys are. And you would be looking at them thinking they are trouble. Like, I really don't want this. Like, and he's known that from the second they've arrived. So, but I did quite like his little list of like happy little Easter eggs. But I did wonder how he knows about that time paradox, because surely that didn't happen.
Oh yeah, but like, you imagine the reports Picard must have had to fill in about it all afterwards. Yeah everyone. I reckon there's a big big book that all captains read about crazy stuff Picard's done. and how to avoid it.
Suki?
The end of that scene when he's reeled off all them exploits, it's when Picard turns to Riker and goes, "Those were the days."
Yeah.
I'm thinking, oh, right. He's very proud of them.
But that is one of the points of this whole, well, the three seasons, and I guess this season in particular, is that whole thing about, well, Picard's chickens keep coming home to roost, and all these wonderful adventures that he had where they were the first ship on the scene and had to make all these life and death decisions, and that was all great, but there's repercussions to that and consequences to all that. It's a bit like the other side of the whole Lower Decks idea about there being second contact and the people going around picking up all the pieces of what the fancy Dans in their flagships are doing on first contact, and I guess Picard's getting the comeuppances of that.
But Andrew, did you say that you thought that Shaw was coming round to their way of thinking?
No.
Sookie.
Sorry, Sookie. I mean,
yeah.
You are both very similar.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Do you think that he's actually coming around to it, or he's just resigned to the fact that he's powerless to stop any of it now?
Yeah, I think he's resigned to it, isn't it? It's not a case that he can argue about it and decide he's going to go with Starfleet, because he's just seen Starfleet seems to be compromised there, and they are going after him as well. So it's a case of, where do I have the best chances of being able to sort something out? And these guys, because he's just reeled off their past exploits, realizes that these guys have actually got out of worse situations than probably this, and these guys are probably the only ones that will help him sort out whatever's happening. And he's seen things happening in front of him which he can't explain, but he needs explanation. I mean, Rose taking a life, and there's also Jack killing all these changelings that are appearing on his ship, right? These are all things that he wouldn't have believed at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
But now they're all happening, and he's thinking, I've got to stick with these guys because I don't know what else to do. He has nowhere else to go. Andrea?
I think the writing's done a really good job, because I think in the space of four episodes, he's had a hell of a lot of character development.
Mm.
And it's felt very natural to the plot. And I think sometimes where Discovery kind of went awry a little bit is, I think it had such a big ensemble cast, they would try and sort of shoehorn in moments of character development like that almost felt either contrary to the plot or unnecessary or not really part, but whereas this has just kind of unfolded as part of the story and hasn't felt forced at all. So I think that's been really well written.
I agree, absolutely. And I think one of the reasons that's been possible is because we've got all these characters that we know already, that we don't have to do all the background work on. Like Discovery had to build everybody up from zero, didn't they? Whereas, yeah, you can drop in a Ro Laren. And I know everybody doesn't know, but if you know what her background is. And it means, yeah, you've got a bit more freedom to explore somebody like Shaw. You're absolutely right, Andrea. The development he's been on is great, isn't it? Amazing. Do you think he's going to survive the season?
Yes, I said from kind of his first appearance that they've intentionally made the crowd want to boo and hiss at him, because he's going to have a really like positive arc, and he's going to save the day in some way, shape or form. Sookie?
I'm just hoping that he says, I do think he will survive the season. Right, but I'm hoping that I'm really hoping that they'll use him as a sacrificial lamb, like basically, and Captain Shaw saves the day by sacrificing himself and doing something, because you will be getting rid of such a great character. Because I think Todd Stashwick is already on Twitter saying he wants a series, right, and it's up to the powers that be that decide if they want to carry on with it, which would be great, because I could see a great series with that character and the crew of the Titan, who are also being established very slowly in this episode. Andrea?
I feel like Todd's really doing that spade work with the fan base in terms of his social media presence, doing sort of Instagram lives and really interacting with people. It feels like it's kind of like the Anson Mount manoeuvre. I want a series, like I'm going to make the fans love me. And he's doing a really good job, I've got to admit. He does kind of come across as sort of one of us in lots of ways. So I think he's winning a lot of favour amongst the fan base, definitely.
Almost like he's doing it deliberately, so that when the big death comes at the end, that he does save the day. Yeah. We're all like, no, you didn't, no.
Well, I'm just thinking of, since Deb's not here, and people will have this on their bingo cards, a little bit like Jason Isaacs did with his Lorca characters. Yeah, I've got the Star Trek universe, and I'm all this, and I'm all this. Bang, I'm dead.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that.
I concur.
But I think they've, I quite like the fact that they've deliberately left a skeleton crew on the Titan, though, for that very reason. It's almost like we don't have to worry about too many people because they've only got a really small crew on the ship.
A starship's just hopelessly overmanned generally, then, because they seem to be able to operate with six people on them all the time anyway. So what have we got all these extra people hanging about for?
Andrea.
The original series films would not work if you actually needed a full crew, which is like, fine, I'm going to stay on the starship and it's all going to be fine. Nothing's going to break. No one's going to die. It just works with five of us.
And then all those spare people that they've got hanging around on starships could, go and work at Starfleet Command and maybe stop some conspiracies happening and they're getting all infiltrated beyond every single episode.
So I'm just wondering about these crew that's all been transferred onto the Intrepid. Were they all changelings? Were they just been sacrificed onto that ship which has got unknown changelings on there? I'm just thinking Ralph possibly has done something pretty bad there in that she's got rid of a crew, a majority of the crew, onto a ship that she knows is also got loads of changelings on.
But I'm guessing she's thinking if the crew of the Titan aren't a threat to the changelings, then they are probably, on the balance of risk, they're probably safer not being moved off of the Titan, considering what the Titan's going to have to face, and the fact that the Titan's now going to have to run, so essentially becoming fugitives, as Shaw put it, that the fewer people involved in that bit of it, the better. Whereas they might have a bit better chance.
But then...
I don't know. No, it's a good point, actually, Suki. Yeah. I hadn't thought of that.
But then Ra would have to be on the... would have foreseen that she's going to be about to be killed for her to do that. Because if she knows the crew has to run... Right, why do you think Ra would have to foresee that she was about to be killed to be able to frame the Titan crew for her death? Steve?
I think there's, because Ro's always been a morally ambiguous character, hasn't she? So that's one of the attractive parts of her character. I think they overplayed her a little bit in this episode. I don't know if that's a popular view or not, but I know she was in a few Next Gen episodes, but I don't remember her being like that massive to Picard. And now all of a sudden there's this thing about, you broke my heart and all that jazz. Well, I don't know. I didn't buy that particularly. I wasn't a big fan of that.
Yeah. Andrew?
I think, kind of, obviously I watched the episode with a non-committed Trekkie who said, did they go out? That was their read from it. It was like, based on that conversation, it was like, did they go out? I was like, no, definitely not. But yeah, I think they've definitely, and I think it's that theme that's kind of run through Picard, isn't it? As Picard is this kind of father figure, and that's another person who they're trying to say, well, he made a right mess of that as well. But I didn't see the return of Ro Laren coming at all, and that was a genuine spoiler-free surprise. And I knew something was floating around. I was like, yeah, I'm not going on social media until I've watched this, and I'm really glad I did, because I was like, what? And it made us really happy, and then it made us really depressed.
Yeah. It's okay.
The fact that the showrunners have released the first six episodes to reviewers well ahead of time. That's what they did just before the series started. And nobody has really mentioned the return of Michelle Forbes at all, which I think is absolutely fantastic, because... It came as a really good surprise suddenly seeing her walk down the corridor in a Starfleet uniform after she's been, basically doing what she had to do in TNG when she left. And it was a fantastic surprise. Now, going to her scenes with Picard there on the holodeck in 10 Forward, I just thought that was a magnificent two-hander between the pair of them. The way the back and forth between them, They they're sort of like ripped into each other about what they did in the past. The fact that I, as she says, she never went out with her, but I think it was more like a mentor to her, and he expected her to follow in his footsteps. But she's got so many demons of her own past, and she decided she's not going to follow him. She's got to do her own thing, and she went off and did it. That sort of betrayed his way of thinking and his way of thinking that she would be able to follow him. And I could see him feeling betrayed and confused as to why she left. And then all these little scenes, this scene between the pair of them, getting to know themselves, getting to know each other after 30 years, and realizing that there's a lot of conflict, but they did what they had to do, right, for the best, for their own good selves, to make sure that they were okay. And then they come together right at the end, and she goes, "Do you trust me?" Now he's standing there looking at her for ages before he decides, yes, he does. Because whatever's happened, he still knows she is doing things for the best part, for the good of Starfleet or whatever. And she needs to be able to get that off her chest and sort things out. And he does trust her. And it all comes around to him saying he does trust her. Steve, you had your hand up there, mate.
I agree, but I think there was two levels of that, wasn't there? There was the trust about whether they thought each other were changelings or not, and then there was the trust about, you know, we've got this history and now we need to get over it and move on. I like the idea that we've got this changeling thing going back on, and, you know, trust no one, all that sort of jazz. Sarah?
I just felt that actually it really highlighted the flaws in Picard's character that we've seen throughout the series, that whole idea about his kind of righteous justification of all his own actions, because whatever he decides is right, even if that means disobeying orders. But for anyone else to do that, that's anti-Starfleet. I really, as much as I was kind of like getting quite cross, I've got quite cross with him throughout most of the series for various reasons, but I like the way that was really laid out for us, and particularly off the back of, you know, we'll come on to him and Jack in a minute, but, you know, his immediate response to Jack is, well, no, you must join Starfleet. Now I know about you, you must join Starfleet. And the same thing with Rose, like the only path to do anything right is within Starfleet. And if you're not in Starfleet, you're against it.
I was just going to say, it kind of felt a bit like, it felt a bit rich from like Picard's point of view, because 10 forward seems to be the place you go to get roasted for like things you've done in your past. That seems to be a theme. Like if you go in there, someone is going to haul you over the coals for something you've done at some point 30 years ago. And he kind of got it in the neck from Shaw about what happened at World 359 and stuff like that. And he's like, oh, bro, it's all right kind of thing. And then it's like almost like, well, you know, you've done something and gone against Starfleet and probably caused people to die. And I want to be forgiven without any sort of consequence, but I'm going to absolutely hammer for you for that because you let me down personally. I did think it was a little bit, it was one of those Picard being a dick moments, which is not out of character. I mean, if you watch season one, it's like, he's not the most likable of chaps at all times, is he? So he's not perfect. I think the only thing I sort of noticed there as well is, was she wearing a black Section 31 badge? She's wearing a black Section 31 badge. I might be wrong there. I'm sure some listeners going to pull us up on that, but I did think she was wearing a black Section 31 badge.
It's okay.
Right at the beginning, when Jack and Picard are having a conversation, he does say many a rebel have found their way to Starfleet, and that sort of foreshadowed the fact that Rose suddenly appeared out of nowhere right in the middle of the episode. So it was all building up to that. Also, we have said about the budget thing, so 10 forward has to be used, right, to be able to, because we don't know what's going to happen towards the end of the season, so they might be saving a lot on sets and effects, right, by just using the same Titan Bridge crew, Titan Bridge, 10 forward, the Metallus 4 marketplace. Those seem to be the only sets that they seem to be using on a regular basis. So maybe they're saving up for whatever they're going to use a bit later on in the season. All right, so I hope it might be something really, really grand and fantastic.
Oh, well, I mean, like, maybe it's a bit soon to be going on to this, but I desperately, desperately hope they're building towards a Cisco return and a sense of locking it all in with DS9 and all that jazz. Because should we talk about Jack? Should we do Jack now?
Yeah, no, we're going to move on to Jack.
Okay,
just one thing. Because we've had loads of mentions of Janeway, I have a feeling she will be the one that will come back rather than Cisco. I don't think the actor wants to reprise his role. Right, but with Janeway, the actress there, she's quite willing to come back, as she has done on a couple of occasions that you guys already know, what with Prodigy. And also, the other actor I want to just mention is Kirk Avicino, yep, who plays the Vulcan gangster. Now, he's another 12 Monkeys alumni. And so we've had three of them, and now we've... within this show, which is telling me that Tally's his own show. So I'm hoping maybe the other three, which are the three women, the regular women actors that were in there, Emily Hampshire, Amanda Shull, and Barbara Sokolova, they might also appear within the last five episodes. You never know. Anyway, Andrea.
So Admiral Janeway was name checked yet again. And I think the nice little link there was Roa being some kind of marquee rehabilitation camp, which kind of sounds like someone who had a crew of marquee who worked with Starfleet for however many years might be involved in. It seemed like a little bit of a link there, possibly to some Voyager characters, if not Janeway herself. So who knows?
Well, Chakotay, if we're talking about him, is somewhere lost.
Mm.
Is he not?
Yes.
Is this the same parallel timeline as Prodigy?
Prodigy ahead? This is a bit ahead of Prodigy, isn't it? I don't know, I've lost. I need a map or a flowchart or something.
He would have liked to have been asked, but wasn't, or was asked and didn't want to. I'm sure I read something about Robert and Picard.
I'm still hanging on for a DS9. Because it was Mucky in a DS9 as well.
Yeah.
Did Eddington, did he die in one of those episodes?
No, he was taken to prison in the end.
Yeah, there you go, he'll be back.
Yeah. So Steve, do you want to kick us off on Jack then?
Oh yeah, okay, right, Jack Crusher. So what do we reckon? I reckon there's three possibilities of who he is or who he's being controlled or manipulated by, right? I reckon it's either 8472 or... outside shout the Borg, because that little voicey thing sounded a little bit like the Borg Queen today, I thought. But favourite top of the pops for me is Parrates. It's Parrates. He's a Parwraith with the red eyes and the stuff going on and the imagery and little dream sequences and stuff that he does. And that was always what they did with Cisco in DS9. So I'm going Parrates.
Andrea.
I did get that Borg voice quite a bit. But it was saying come back to me, wasn't it? Rather than sort of a collective. And those red tendrily things don't seem very Borg to me. They seem very organic. I don't know, part of us thinks is Kai Wynn going to like pop out of a box and say, that's a big old card. But I'm not sure. And I quite like that I'm not sure, because I think often when you've watched Trek a lot, I think particularly in the first few episodes, I saw things coming very quickly. Whereas now I think that mystery's kind of expanded and I don't know. And I quite like not knowing.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, right. Now, that voice that Jack keeps hearing, can you listen closely to and tell me that's not Beverly?
But I thought that for a bit.
So... this bit with Jack and all the dream sequences and things reminded me very much of Battlestar Galactica. So if you haven't seen it and you would like to see it, then just skip the next little bit, because there's going to be some major spoilers coming up. But that whole idea of Anders and the rest of them who... have you guys seen it? Do you mind spoilers?
No, I ain't seen it. I don't care.
Oh, okay, fine. So essentially, there are some characters in that who realize slowly over time that they are Cylons, and it's a little bit they realize something's wrong, and then they realize that they are Cylons and essentially are part of the enemy, and that really sprung to mind with that whole idea of he's really worried that he is something really bad. But yeah, did you get that?
No, it's only when you said it there that I thought of it. You're right. Yeah, that is exactly what it feels like.
So you think he's a changeling?
I don't know what he is.
Well, being a changeling would work with Come Back to Me, as in return, because yeah. they sent out whatever it was, 100 mini baby changelings, didn't they, to go and explore the quadrant, and Odo was one, and there was that other guy from that J.G. Hurstler played. I can't remember the name of the character now, but that were coming back to the Great Link.
Yeah, and also with this whole idea about new changelings being able to grow organs and things, I guess there's no reason why they couldn't, you know, grow in utero and, you know, experience that whole humanoid life process.
I never understood why changelings didn't do that anyway in Deep Space Nine. Like, how, like, it could do all these really complex machines and why not just be able to, you know, replicate blood and organs and things? I like that they've done them this way this time, yeah. But you never, I didn't understand why they didn't do it before.
Yeah, and actually that does fit with the idea of a changeling, like a baby that's been placed somewhere where it wasn't originally intended. Andrea?
I'm feeling for Odo a little bit now, because they've clearly all been like, not just nose training camp, but they've been like heart, lungs, kidneys, liver training camp as well. Like, so that there's clearly been some moving forward. And I suspect that there's got to be some reason behind that. So, because the changelings could never do those things. It's not a huge amount of time that's passed for an evolution to have taken place. So I'm guessing there's been some external interference, and I don't know who that is.
Oh, that's interesting.
Maybe they've joined up with Species 8472 and interbred. How about that?
I don't wish to know about this interbreeding thing.
That's a whole other movie.
Okay. Triple X.
And how do we feel about Jack and Picard now?
I still don't buy that he's really his son. I don't think he is. It's all a setup. It's not really his son. I just don't.
Haven't they DNA tested him and all this stuff?
Oh, DNA testing. Well, it's not going to prove anything anymore. It's all faked and set up and manipulated. Do you remember the Ferengi guy in that Next Gen episode where they brought his son Jason Vigo and they had DNA for him there, and that was meant to be his son and wasn't? I don't buy it. I buy it no more than I bought the fact that Worf had died for a few minutes. Like, there was no no sitting there watching it go, yeah, no, he's not dead.
So going to the Jack and his visions, are they visions that he's actually seen? But I still don't understand what the red door is. Oh, Andrea.
It was just his kind of his red eye Terminator 2 like kicking into action thing. So I'm not entirely sure what he is, but I don't think he's human. But yeah, you could tell it was a dream sequence. I think at the beginning of the episode, it was like, yeah, this is a dream. Like, it didn't fool anyone, particularly as he's kind of in uniform. But also, I do think, as an aside, he does look quite captainy still. I still maintain that, like, he does look very convincing in a Starfleet uniform, even though he really doesn't want to wear one.
The door is the entrance to the Celestial Temple. It's just a metaphor. It's the wormhole.
Okay. The visions. Now, he did have two visions that were proper visions. And then the third one, I thought was a vision, but turned out to be true. Because all of a sudden, he takes out four changelings and uses... And he doesn't know why, doesn't know how. He just decided he's going to take them out. Now, this is where it gets really worrying about it. So I'm thinking, as you says, there is something there going on.
Yeah, see, Cylon. He's a Cylon.
He's a Cylon.
That would be.
That is a very Cylon thing to do. Not know you're a Cylon, suddenly realise you've killed four people, and get a bit worried about yourself. No, I mean, just for me, I'm not a Bev Picard person, so the whole thing's just slightly distasteful for me anyway. And I also don't believe that a medical officer in the future would accidentally get pregnant. That just seems really careless. But there we go. That's by the by. Andrea?
I feel like they're kind of playing with the idea that Beverly's a change a little bit. Like, if you go back to when we sort of first saw her ship, like, collecting almost like artifacts and studying files of places where you were and events you were part of, and people you know, I think they're kind of teasing that idea a little bit. But is it not Beverly? I think it is Beverly, personally, but I think that's a potential sort of surprise they could throw in there. But then again, she's kind of revealed their secrets now, because I thought when she was very interested in going and having a look at this sort of changeling corpse, I was thinking they're kind of teasing that idea a little bit. And they do make her seem a little bit odd sometimes. I think she responds quite oddly to things that, and I don't know if that's just an acting choice or it's me looking for things that aren't there, but I think they're kind of playing with that idea a little bit. Like I think they did last episode. I think when Picard and Riker were arguing, I think they were trying to sort of tease, is Riker not Riker? And so I think everybody's going to have a little phase of suspicion at some point to keep it going. Steve?
And that's always what you get with the changeling storylines, isn't it? And I guess they've got to be a bit careful that it doesn't just get too tedious on that you don't look at everybody and go, oh, they're a changeling. Because I agree. Like a couple of weeks ago, I was totally of the view that was not Riker, because no way would Riker say, you've killed us all on the bridge in front of everybody. Like, regardless of how much he'd fallen, I could buy that he'd fallen out with Picard, but not that he would say that on the bridge in front of a crew. And you saying that about Bev, I can see that, that she may be a changeling, yeah. And that, you know, it's all a setup.
So I had written as well, that last scene with Bev and Jack in the sick bay was really clunky. Mm. it was just really awkward, and I didn't think it flowed or felt particularly natural. I suddenly felt like I was watching two people acting. But now you say that, Andrea, maybe it's part of a bigger plan, a bigger plot. Suki?
That scene, it was a bit off, that scene. But if I'm going to go back to another scene that was off, is the initial Worf and Raffi, just after they've had their first fights on the La Serena. They sit down and they do a load of exposition. Just sit there between the back and forth. This has got to happen, that's got to happen, this has got to happen. And they just go backwards and forwards. And it was just exposition after exposition after exposition. Really did my head in.
I think that Worf-Raffi thing's kind of, in terms of them just being off on their own doing stuff, I think that's run its course now. I think, because in the first episode, they got her doing a load of exposition as well, didn't they? And they've got kind of a bit trapped in that little cycle there now. So the quicker they get them back together with Riker and Picard, I think the better.
I think they've presented her really childlike in this episode. Yeah. And I kept looking at her thinking, you're a grown woman. Like, but sort of some of the scripting and some of her behaviours were really childlike. And even sort of more so than you'd expect from sort of Raffi as well. But that was just me. Andrew?
I think they're quite a fun pair, and it was unexpected. I never thought when they were going to kind of bring back Worf. I really didn't kind of see that as how that would play out. And I think they put two good characters together, but I can kind of see where you're coming from with that. That sort of, they have written us slightly oddly this season in some places. It's like, I know she's been through a lot, but she seems extra damaged sometimes, and it's like, has something happened off screen we don't know about? Because actually, we thought she kind of got sorted out a little bit. Steve,
it's like they've kind of tried to reverse that whole Raffi Elnor thing, where she was the mentor and he was the kid. Now they kind of reversed it around, so Worf is the mentor and Raffi's the kid. But I think they've made her appear like you're saying, Sarah, much more immature now than she was. And I guess, you know, trauma and getting over things and all that jazz. But I think she's more powerful than that as a character. I think they're doing a bit of a disservice. And the bit where they sort of tease that they're off to the Daystrom place next. That in the trailers, that was the bit I think that Moriarty was in as well, wasn't it? So is that the thing that might just break up that relationship a little bit, that they're going to introduce Moriarty to that with that? Is that the thing that Kryn was sharing as the way in through the AI? Some clever
unstable AI.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
The Raffi bit. She'd been on her own for a while before Picard picked her back up again. And then she got settled when she had a crew around her, and she sort of settled and became a better person, you could say. And then now she's been working by herself again for a few months. And that's probably made her a bit more childish, as Sarah says, childish. So she's now a bit more uneven, unstable. And all this is, she needs to get back to having people around her to be able to make sort of rational decisions without feeling petulant as a child and rash. So I think she needs to have people around her. Having Wolf around her maybe has helped her a bit, but she needs more people to be able to bounce off more people.
Yeah, I think she needs someone to look after. She needs someone to so that she has to be competent. She has to be with it. She needs someone to be dependent on her, because almost for her, that's her making up for just, you know, being a really rather useless mother. She sort of displaces that onto other waifs and strays. Otherwise, yeah, as you say, she does descend into being the child herself. Yeah, I've really enjoyed the toings and froings between the two of them. I've loved seeing Wolf, and I'm really, really looking forward to seeing what happens next with him. I mean, I'm hoping very much that there is going to be a lot more interaction with him now with Riker and Seven and the rest of the Titan crew, which I'm looking forward to. But what about our gangster then?
So I found Kryn quite like a bit cringe. Like, I don't know what to do with shitty Vulcans. Like, it just seems weird. It's like, I was like, no, it's going to be Romulan. It's like, no, he's definitely Vulcan. And I'm like, no, he can't be. And it's like, yeah, he's definitely Vulcan. And I found something really, and I mean, they kind of must exist. I can't think of a Vulcan character we've ever seen that is anything like that. Like, they're existing in the shady old underworld of Metallus Prime or wherever they are. I found it odd, I think. Not to say it was wrong choice, but yeah, I struggled a little bit. He also had his IDIC necklace on. I did notice that as a little Easter egg there that was just dropped in.
What's an IDIC necklace?
Infinite diversity and infinite combinations.
Which I guess you could argue is the excuse for there being criminal Vulcans. Like, that's something that's infinitely diverse.
Yeah.
But at the same time, his like little try and logical justify criminal activity, because what do you say, something like, you can't have a utopia without crime. It's like, what?
What? It's literally the opposite. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of was just waiting for that bit to be over.
I thought he reminded me of Nero. You saying Romulan? He sounded and looked like Nero, didn't he, off Star Trek 2009? Yeah, the Eric Bana character off the Pine films.
Those scenes sort of drag the episode, because I thought the highlight was Roland Picard, but then the Worf and Raffi with Kryn, it just weren't great scenes. But you know, it had to be put into the episode. Andrea,
I kind of picked up earlier when they were talking about that sort of access being denied to Daystrom, that the Worf's handler was female, and I'd put Troy ? Because obviously I didn't know Roland was going to be in the episode, so I was trying to think, it's going to be somebody we know, it's not going to be somebody random, and I was trying to think of female characters who hadn't had much to do, and I think that would have been really interesting. That would have been like a bit of a shift, and we know things aren't great in the home with Riker at the moment, so is she off doing something else? But that was one of my little theories that fizzled out to nothing.
No, I really liked that kind of full circleness of Ro being Worf's handler. I like the way that all fitted together quite neatly.
I agree.
So, anyone got anything else to add?
Yeah.
Oh, Steve's got lots. All right, fire away, Steve, and then Andrew can.
Okay. Well, I'll just do two then, and then I'll stop. So, I liked my favourite thing in the whole episode. On the shooty Star Trek bit was the whole bit where Rose shuttle blew up, Shuttlecraft Gorkon, right? And I thought that was all very similar, or a callback to Star Trek VI. You know, the bit where the Enterprise fires on the Klingon flagship with Gorkon on it, and it's like How did that all happen? I thought it was very similar to that, like the way the Intrepid sort of sunk down, like the Klingon battlecruiser does in Star Trek VI, and then came back up. And then the torpedo tube came like alive and red, and then there was a little sort of hint of perhaps a battle scene. I thought that was very like Star Trek VI. That was my other favourite bit. And then my second most interesting bit of the episode, I thought, was how easy is it to turn off the holodeck safety protocol? Like, you just want to press one button and turn off all the safety protocol. Not even like, are you sure you want to do this? Well, it's like, no, we're just going to turn off the safety protocols. Done. Thanks very much.
What button that is conveniently located out of sight under a bar? Like, yes. If you wanted to sneak it on and off, like, that is the place you would locate it.
Even in First Contact, they even had the decency to make him type in a few codes first before he turned off. This was like, no, off, done.
Oh, dear. Andrea.
So at the very start of the episode, we had TOS bridge sounds before we saw anything. I was like, ooh, noises. And even, as I say, even non-Trekkie in the house, oh, them Star Trek noises, them, I know them noises. They're old noises. I was like, yep. Picard was extremely dense, telling Jackie should join Starfleet. I do have someone that dense in my life, so like, yeah, it is believable. I felt like Worf and Raffi's fight was very unfair. I wouldn't want to fight a Klingon with a batleth with two sticks. I felt that was a brave choice. It didn't seem like a fair scrap. I picked up on the choice of ship. So the USS Intrepid, the only reference is to a TOS episode called Court Martial, where Kirk is put on trial, which seems kind of relevant to what's potentially happening with Picard and Riker. Somebody had faked their death in that episode. They'd done some tampering with the computer and things. So the sort of the main antagonist in that episode had faked their death, and we thought we were dead for the whole of the episode, and it turned out they weren't dead at all. And we're just trying to get some revenge on Kirk. So I think that's probably been chosen intentionally, because I feel like we certainly have people who kind of like to play with these little Easter eggs and make us all think about things that aren't there. But I did think that there was some degree of sort of conscious choice of the Intrepid of all the ships you could have picked. That's its only appearance that I'm aware of. Sucky.
So are you saying that Ro has faked to death? Or Ro has perhaps, because you lost the transmission just right before the ship shuttle went into the ship. Right, so just maybe she jumped ship onto the Intrepid, and she's still on there. Alive and well.
Possible. The guy in Court Martial was stuck in a like some sort of emergency escape pod thing that you have to stay in to keep the ship from blowing up or something, and Kirk jettisoned him or didn't jettison him, so he died. Is that right? Or, except he didn't because he was framed.
Well, there's also somebody on one of the Twitter feeds that I was reading. They did say, why couldn't she have just jumped into a suit, bailed out of the shuttle, left it to go up, and then Intrepid or Titan could have just beamed her back on, because there wouldn't have been any transporter inhibitors. She could have got off that ship, off the shuttle. But you never know.
Anything else? I thought the bar standoff had a little bit of a Western feel to it. There was quite a big scene about how changelings can now bleed, and I couldn't resist writing, if it bleeds, we can kill it. There's a reference to Predator, if anyone's not aware of that. Frontier Day got a little bit more of it. They've been kind of teasing that along. I feel like the finale is going to be on Frontier Day now. I think like all the fleet's going to come together for something to happen. And they've clarified that's a Starfleet anniversary. Worf's death never felt like real for a second. Like, I never even flinched. I quite like seeing a Starfleet ship fighting another Starfleet ship. I quite like seeing the two like going head to head. That's quite good.
Oh, I must jump in there. Did you notice how like that the shields with the little dotty thing around it was like in Star Trek 2 when the Reliant and the Enterprise fight? So yeah, there you go. Yeah, nice.
And I think that they've been kind of teasing the original films quite a lot anyway throughout the series. Other little Easter eggs I spotted was in the list of criminals. I saw Morn and Brunt him there from DS9.
And Akona.
There were some others there, but those were the only two I caught. The mobile emitter, little Voyager reference there. Obviously, that's tech that's been brought back from there.
The only bit I've got is the Bajoran earring. I just like the fact that I thought he was just like a memento that she'd given him, and I had no other inclination that it could be anything different. I just thought they've just had this heart-to-heart wonderful meeting. They've cleared the air, sort of. And then she gives him something to remember her by. I was just the Bajoran earring as she leaves. But then turns out it's a data chip containing all her investigation, which is a great surprise. I just thought that was a great. Other than that, that is it for me for my notes. Sarah, have you got anything?
Yeah, so for me, it's just, I'm just. Picard. He's just so everything's about me all the time. His whole thing with Jack, it's a bit like, well, now I know you, I'm going to be your dad, and you need, you know, without a kind of any concept of the fact that he might feel differently or might need a bit more time or. You know, I don't know. It is very much like, well, I know about you now and I need to be in your life and I want to do this and I need to do that. And I found all of that very, very irritating. I wish I'd been on the pod for the episode where Beverly told him, because that whole conversation in a few episodes back drove me nuts.
Just on that. Yeah. So how did you feel about when he went, when he was being arrested almost? He went, don't worry, I'll take responsibility for all of this. He says to become Riker.
And I will sort it all out. I know people in high places. I mean, that was kind of what's the word I'm looking for?
Zenith?
I don't know. The impression he was giving. And then my other one was when Riker and Picard are stood with Ro. And I can't remember exactly what Rose says, but she essentially talks about, you know, well, we're gathering information to see if we're going to press charges. And Riker says, what charges? It's like, you stole a freaking ship. Yeah. Like, what? What charges do you think you're going to face? But apart from that, I really, really enjoyed the episode. I want things to move a bit more now. I'm kind of glad that, oh my gosh, my brain's not working. What's the name of the baddie?
Vedic.
I'm glad Vedic wasn't in it this week, because all I can see is Perry from Kevin and Perry when I see her. So for me, sorry, I've spoilt that for you now, Andrea.
I feel like I'm not going to see anything else now. I'm waiting for Vedic to see. Yes, Miss Patterson.
from the minute that a character appeared on stage, that is all I could see was Perry. I think those are my few. Steve, do you got any further gems you wish to share with us?
I liked it when the Titan was doing repairs and there were those little worker bee dot things from Discovery. Is that Discovery?
Yeah.
And I like the variety of, you were saying about badges, Andrea, but the variety of all the uniforms and the badges. I know some people get very agitated about why everyone's wearing different uniforms, but I like that. It's good. That's a bit of interest. And my favorite line in the whole thing was when Shaw said to Seven, Riker and Picard, he said, look, we've been through a lot, I'm going to step outside, but you get your bullshit story straight.
Yes. Like,
that's just brilliant. I like that.
Yeah, he was great.
But other than that, I think that's my notes.
Lovely. Well, I feel like we've covered some good ground today. Do we want to do feedback, or do you want to give your lights out of five first?
You're the host.
Yeah, the power set.
Wow, there. I know. Let's do our lights.
Awesome.
How many lights you see?
Four lights!
I asked how many lights you see.
Andrea, do you want to start?
I'm really torn, but I'm going to say 4.5. I think last week's was a better episode. I haven't got a lot of nitpick this week, but I don't think it was quite as good. So 4.5.
Oh, Suki?
I am going to go with a solid. I was going to give 4.5 myself, but I think it was a great episode. And I just loved the interaction between Ro and Picard. So I'm actually going to give him 5, because I think that those scenes were just brilliant. They're electric. I just thought they just stood. It was standout scenes in the whole story, and he just brought the story to life, especially with all the baggage coming from TNG to this episode 30 years later, and you still feel football for these characters and the way they've interacted all these years. So I'm going to go with a 5, my first 5 of the season.
Ooh, Steve.
I'm going to go 4 lights because as you all know, I don't believe in giving anything other than full integers 4 lights. You can't have bits of a light.
It's Andrea, is he telling you off, Andrea? He's telling you off.
No, 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 it's a long-standing thing. I just... Ugh.
Yeah,
but
it's on and off intermittently.
She's got a dodgy connection.
And just to make it easy for Suki to nominate a red shirt, I'm going to deduct my one light precisely because of I didn't buy the Roe Picard thing. I think they overplayed it. I think there was too much. I think they asked too much of us believing that Roe and Picard had this massive backstory when I don't think they really have. I think it was overplayed. So, sorry, there you go. 4. But it was brilliant otherwise.
I think I'm going to go 4 as well. I really enjoyed it. Oh, maybe I am a 4.5. Maybe I've got a flickering light as well. Yeah, I did really enjoy it. And the things that are bothering me are the things that have bothered me all along. So, yeah, I think it's going to be 4.5. It's going to be 4.5. Yeah, definitely. Well, there we go. So I think that brings us on to our listeners' feedback. Right, Andrew, do you want to start with Blue Cat?
Yep, so we've got some feedback from Blue Cat, who says, this week's episode, meh. I wish they'd get out of that so obviously a soundstage they use for Freehold. I mean, Metalis 4 or District 6, whatever. I'm sorry, but I feel like the Worf Raffi scenes drag, except for their sparring practice. They need better scripting. What a bore. Hunting another badass in District 6. A Vulcan with gangland bling. What the fuck? At least a knife fight was fun. And Worf took his wounded like a trooper. Or like a Blackbeard, our flag means death joke. Good to see Captain Shaw back in command with his snarky occasional remarks to Picard and Riker. Get your bullshit story straight, lol. I like the interaction between Ro and Picard. Too bad she had to die heroically. Would have been nice to still have her around, but it was for a good cause. The threat is huge and she made a significant step in stopping it, at least where Titan was concerned. I need to re-watch the last Ro episodes of TNG to get the full impact of her scenes here with Picard, because it seems their mentorship connection was much deeper than I remember. When Ro gave Picard the earring, it was a touching thing, and then it became a genius thing when Riker used it to open all the files with all that data. The mystery with Jack is gathering steam. He kicked ass in the corridor. Maybe he's a changeling slayer. That joke was for fellow fans of What We Do in the Shadows. Those webs of red matter, they look like they could be mycelial, as Deb said last week. I am reminded of Culber's little mycelium travel capsule in Discovery Season 2. And I hope she's right, that Lorca might come back. Check your bingo cards, guys. Except he'd be that creep Mirror Lorca, unless Prime Lorca somehow fell in the mycelial network. Let's dream on, Deb and Andrea. Thanks for that, Kat. There's a bit more. However, yes. My friend Ange pointed out that the red weapon looked like crew members on Voyager after they were attacked by the creepy three-legged species number I forget. The network of dark veins on their faces. Could species, what's their number, be the big bad this season? They were pretty badass on Voyager. Even the Borg were afraid of them. I was not so impressed this week, except by the subplot with Ro. I did like Jack's exchange with his dad about joining Starfleet. Lord Picard, always trying to get new recruits. Do you get extra leave days for each recruit, like I would have got in the course card? I'm giving this episode 3 lights out of 5. Except for Ro, it's a mess from me. Thanks, Cam.
Yeah.
Right. I've got Deb. And she sent a message all the way from Italy. And she has given me permission. All right, so just be aware. Ciao! I am missing you, but having an amazing time in Italy. They even have tomatoes here. Loving it. I better not do that anymore. My thoughts on this episode are affected by having watched it Friday on my iPhone at 2:30 a.m. So would not have fully appreciated the beautiful cinematic effect. So, Ro, that was a nice surprise for giving a how great the previous episode was, this had a lot to live up to, as it seems to be the start of the next bit of the story arc. I guess we should accept it. It's more about setting up new questions.
It seems to be the rogue changelings can fool the Starfleet PCR test. I think they have neglected the spot to spot the more obvious ways of identifying them. They'd be the ones beaming on board with a Bajoran bucket under their arm. Plus, they do all seem to have dodgy necks and sort of crack their necks in unison. So look for an appointment card for the great Link chiropractor.
The way Picard related to Rao had so much depth. A combination of love, disappointment, and then pride. Heartbreaking.
Jack, don't make him angry. You won't like him when he's angry. Crusher, so what is he? I don't think he's a changeling. As the voice says to find me, not us. The subtitles have apparently been putting us in spoilers again with an answer to the voice. Although it may be a red herring, but if it is indeed Anne Widdicombe, then it would be a huge plot twist.
Just when you thought Shaw had opened up and was seemingly dealing with his trauma, he's behaving like a childish dick again. And I love it. The glee when he thought Picard and Riker would be put through a court-martial and reinstating Seven by knighting her. Love him.
Now, and Worf.
Say that again.
Now, Worf and Raffi are on board. I am so excited for next week. Maybe Jordy will join them. And how can they go this many episodes without a Brent Spiner appearance?
I hope to be back next week and look forward to hearing this week's pod to see what lovely, elegant voice Suki reads this out in. I see 3 buckets out of 5. Vi amo tutti, Deb.
Suki, do you remember, that was wonderful, do you remember the 80s kids TV show Cosmo and Dibs?
No.
Okay, well, look it up, because you just did an amazing impression of both Cosmo and Dibs. That was awesome.
Oh, wait a sec, it does sound familiar, actually, thinking about it.
Steve, go for it.
So did Jack.
Yeah.
Jack Momaro, hi Jack. A difficult episode, really. Very much a show in transition episode from one phase to what I predict is another, which could be quite different. These new super breed of changelings who can pass blood tests and won't turn into a plate of marmalade jelly when they die was predictable, but I really like it. I really wonder which character in the Titan will be revealed to be one. I won't be surprised if Jack isn't one, but he is very significant to them. Got to say, even after last week's Wolf 359 explanation scene, Todd Stashwick is great at his role. But Captain Shaw is just such a dick. His reinstatement of Seven is just so indicative of this. If he was on the show, I'd redshirt him without needing to think. Hang on, Federation Day has every ship in one place? Isn't that a logistical nightmare? And what if something happens? Send the 7th Fleet. They're nowhere near. They're just flying about for a made-up day. I was so happy Ro is back, although to me, Michelle Forbes is more Admiral Helena Kane of the Battlestar Pegasus now. Yeah. Still, it was hugely welcome that after leaving the character dangling 29 years ago, we picked her back up. Her death is a meaningful one, although I found it convenient she fell for people behind her planting a bomb. It also really highlights the dichotomy question of what makes a person a terrorist, or rather a freedom fighter, a question not asked enough, so it's very Star Trek. Killing her off in her return episode? On one hand, 2 massive surprises in this episode, and I believe the grief on display from Admiral Picard. But it's not exactly fitting for this beloved character to surprise return and die in under an hour. I'm no expert, but I don't think doing an autopsy, particularly on a somewhat unknown life form, in Starfleet uniforms with hair not tied back, is pretty much a massive no-no. Also, I love Ten Forward and its set, but in an emergency, is that the only program which can run? Can't they run the crappy 90s tiki bar from Voyager? That's a good shout. Overall, a tricky episode to recommend, as there aren't too many standout moments. But there is to me a feel that this episode is the Star Trek Picard equivalent of spoilers for a seminal 63 years old film, the lengthy scene in Psycho where Anthony Perkins disposed of Janet Leigh, which seems to have little purpose, but it's about giving time to this absolute juggernaut of a film from being built up as one thing for the runtime of the film so far to now, something very different. After episode 10, this one definitely needs reevaluating. But until then, I give it 4 mobile emitters out of 5. Is this one still Jack?
Yeah, it's still Jack.
Ah, excellent. Radical idea, which is a long shot. What if the red door, which Jack sees, connects to the Guardian of Forever and a certain Oscar-winning badass steps through? Ooh, switch out, Jack.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got Dave K. Well, that was pretty great. Ro Laren is one of my favourite Trek characters, and the episodes Ensign Ro and Preemptive Strike are 2 of my favourite episodes of Star Trek. Maybe one day we can have a much longer conversation about those. I thought Commander Ro was brilliant here, and I love the reaction of Picard. This all also happened in an atmosphere of mistrust because of the changeling threat, which heightened tension across the whole episode perfectly. Honestly, I felt a lot more at the death of Laren than I did at the apparent death of Worf. Sorry, Jack Crusher looked great in the Starfleet uniform, and I'm now properly intrigued by what's happening to him. The Worf plot was fine, but for me, the weaker part of the episode. It's been a slow burn for me, but I'm now really enjoying this season. 4 lights for the episode, 5 for Ro Laren. May she walk forever in the path of the prophets.
So just picking up on one of those points, actually, which I forgot to mention, is observing what appears to be your own corpse and your own autopsy. Like, I'm yes. not really surprised that she's from a Worf. I think that was quite a light reaction. Like, you know, I think he would be a little bit perturbed by that. So I've got Tom Turlow, regular contributor, who says, unfortunately I'm abroad at the moment, my Amazon Prime account doesn't offer me access to Picard. Boo. So I fear I'll be unable to give any feedback this week and perhaps next. You are all bereft, I know, but try and keep calm and carry on. Is everyone on holiday this week?
They must all be in the same place, Italy. We got our final piece of written feedback, and that's from Schrodinger's librarian at Farflung Hope 5, and they say season 1 had Picard grappling with the reality that Starfleet doesn't always live up to the ideals he cherishes. In this episode, we caught up with a character whose journey in /out/back again with Starfleet embodies those ideals. My partner kept saying something is wrong with Jack the entire episode, and I'm relieved we got the same line from Jack himself by the end. We need answers. This episode gets 5 out of 5 Captain Shaw's exasperated sighs from me. Cheers for that.
Oh, that's great.
We have got some audio feedback from Steve, and here it is now.
Hello, I'm Stephen Hatcher from the Hoover's Doctor Who group and a Star Trek fan since 1969, as I keep on telling you. Right, well, this is Picard Season 3, Episode 5, Imposters. Let's start by talking about this episode's cold opening. We see Jack Crusher in Starfleet uniform ruthlessly massacring the bridge crew of the Titan with red tendrils and glowing eyes in abundance. What's this? We just have time to wonder before it's revealed it's some sort of dream or vision that Jack is having, possibly even a premonition of the future. Certainly it's enough to worry Jack, as is the voice in his head, apparently of his mother, urging him to find me, hear me, connect us. We're left in even more doubt about Jack. Is he human at all? And for that matter, what about Beverly? These doubts are intensified later in the episode, when it emerges that the changelings can now mimic human anatomy even better than before, to the extent it's almost impossible to tell them from the real thing. Is Jack a changeling? Is Beverly a changeling? Well, no doubt Jack's true nature will become an important part of the storyline in the second half of the season. And talking of which, the first part of the season is now over. The Titans escaped from the deadly nebula, and for now at least from the changeling Captain Vadik and the Shrike. The real business of the season can begin, with the focus fully on the changeling subversion of Starfleet, and with the twin plots, Picard and Co on the Titan, and Worf and Raffi coming together. As far as Picard, Riker and Seven are concerned, their troubles are far from over, as Captain Shaw gleefully informs them that they're about to rendezvous with the USS Intrepid, on board which a security team will take them into custody and press charges. I think Shaw's glee, as I've said, in this scene was a little bit overdone, to be honest. I mean, he's just been in battle with these guys, and he's there absolutely rubbing his hands together and giggling to himself at the idea that they're going to get in trouble. You're going to get done, you are, he might have said. A little bit overdone, but never mind. He's still a great character there. So, what have we said? So, Seven scuttles off to hide Jack in plain sight by putting him into a Starfleet uniform, all bells ringing there, and disguising him as one of the crew. Meanwhile, the chief of the Intrepid security team arrives, and much to Picard and Riker's consternation, it turns out to be none other than Ro Laren, Picard's former protege who betrayed both him and Starfleet to join the Maquis. Picard cannot believe she's back in uniform, and with the rank of commander too. But as Will points out, the crimes for which she was imprisoned were 30 years in the past. Doesn't time go on? The return of Michelle Forbes as Ro, one of the most interesting recurring characters to come out of The Next Generation, came as a terrific surprise. I hadn't heard about that happening at all. The moment of the season so far as I'm concerned, and Forbes is absolutely wonderful. Well, Ro is clearly in no business to make any excuses for her old shipmates, and she's already determined they are guilty as charged. The scenes between Ro and Picard are the backbone of this episode, initially full of hostility and anger, and then sorrow and regret. And then after Ro bundles Picard at gunpoint into the holodeck 10 forward, still no holodeck Guinan, and the two emerge from a Mexican standoff to convince each other that they can be trusted, the regret continues, but it's now infused with forgiveness and mutual admiration. Meanwhile, on Metallus, Raffi and Worf are continuing their investigation, with the trail leading to the Vulcan gangster Corinne, who, despite our heroes believing they have outsmarted him, he captures them both and forces them to fight to the death in revenge for the Ferengi Sneed. And this results in Raffi apparently stabbing Worf to death. I admit I was both shocked and disappointed at this development, believing our favourite Klingon to be actually deceased. Well, you never know, this is the final series. But rest in peace he does not, and Corinne is forced to hand over the key that will allow them to get past the super AI guarding the Daystrom Institute, which seems to be at the heart of this particular part of the mystery. On the Titan, Ro gives Picard her Bajoran earring as a memento, apparently, and heads off back towards the Intrepid in a shuttle. But, oh no, her security detail are all changelings, who beam off back to the Titan, leaving Ro a little present of a ticking bomb. With a couple of mates, the changelings find Jack, and Jack dispatches them all with hardly drawing breath. There really is something a bit different about that young man. Ro, meanwhile, unable to defuse the bomb on time or to beam off, flies the shuttle into one of the Intrepid's nacelles, dying in the process, in order to give the Titan time to escape. With the Intrepid about to open fire, Picard and Riker convince Shaw that the best plan might be to engage warp and bugger off rather quickly. On inspection of Ro's earring, Jean-Luc and Will discover that it's a sort of memory stick containing all of her investigations into the conspiracy. And then, to her surprise, or rather not, a message comes in from Ro's two operatives, none other than Worf and Raffi. It's now up to them and to Picard and the Titan to continue Ro's work. And what a fantastic episode that was. Absolutely made by the return of Michelle Forbes as Ro, but also by the enormous stride forward in the plot. The ongoing mysteries of Jack and of what's going on at Daystrom remain to tantalise us. I'm sure there's some old TNG lore involved there. But the bigger picture of what is happening seems to have opened up. We're looking at a full-scale takeover of Starfleet by the Dominion, with only one small ship and a couple of friends to stop it. Bring it on.
Lovely. Thanks for that, Steve. So this brings us on to perhaps the main focus of our podcast this week, which is our votes, nominations, if you will, for Red Shirt of the Week.
I woke up this morning, put on my red shirt. Oh.
Mr. Davis, do you want to start?
Straight in. Oh, yeah. Okay. So I am going to, I think everybody could have been redshirted this week because I don't know why. Why could everybody have redshirted? Why do I want to? No, I'm going to redshirt you, Sarah. Sarah, I'm going to redshirt you because you you took charge, and I found that very unnerving and unsettling and against the natural order of things. So I'm going to have to nab you, I'm afraid. Sorry.
And how am I going?
Not yet. You have not been voted yet.
Ah, oh, fair enough. Suki.
I'm going to vote Steve for ganging up on Sarah for some unknown reason, other than the fact that he can't be in charge of an episode for once. Now, I understand now how his kids feel, you know. Why is he always in charge? Why is it? Why isn't it your mummy dear is in charge? And so I am now going to vote Steve. Sorry, mate.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Andrea?
I feel like I'm wearing a Deep Space Nine hoodie, and I feel like as an act of female solidarity, I'm going to have to vote for Steve, I'm afraid. Girls get it done.
I don't know. You did do the washing today. That was tricky.
Then you can't vote for yourself. Therefore, no. He has actually won.
Does that mean I don't have to? Because I would have voted for myself, because there was a definite bit in the beginning where I was consistently talking over Andrea, for which I think definitely needs red shirting. But no, yeah, Steve, it's going to be you.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Okay. And how do you want to get rid of him, Sarah?
Ooh, what should we do?
Is it to spend eternity on a holodeck full of washing machines?
Yeah.
You just keep filling them, just like it's more walking just around.
I mean, that kind of sounds like my life. I think he's going to have to undergo an autopsy because they suspect he's a changeling. So, yeah, I think he wasn't really dead, but they did an autopsy on him anyway, with their long locks flowing all over his innards.
That's quite a brutal death.
Yeah, like, I was going to say so. That's a bit...
Bob was consumed by the great space vagina in the middle of the nebula. So that seems like quite a harsh death compared to some other people's deaths.
Well, you know, I am I'm a critical care nurse, so, you know.
It's worse ways to go.
Sure there is. I don't wish to know what other idea Sarah has.
Yeah, actually, it's quite funny. I was thinking about seeing dead bodies as you were talking about LaForge, bless her, having to look at her own dead body, which wasn't her dead body. Still very creepy. Anyway, on that cheery note, Suki.
Right, I just wanted to thank you guys for coming on again, for helping us out this week. Brilliant. Well done, Sarah. And has this given you the bug to actually hosting your Davis Flyer log for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, normally we're all just too lazy to do it.
I know. It's not like some paternalistic thing. It's just that no other bugger will do it.
No, to be fair, Izzy's quite good at it. With Prodigy, we had quite a few episodes where Izzy couldn't record with us, so she's quite happy to host. And Evie, quite frankly, we're never entirely sure if she really understands the concept of what we're doing. So she's a little bit of an unknown entity, bless her. Yeah, so that's why. He's not, you know, I am allowed out. It's all right. I don't need help.
Well, thank you very much for coming on. Right, Sarah, sign us out, please, Bob.
Okay, well, thank you very much, all of you. So Steve, Andrea, Suki, thank you for taking part in this pod. Thank you for having us back. We've thoroughly enjoyed it because we love talking about Trek with you. And thank you for everyone who's listening and for the feedback as well. It's great to hear your thoughts on all these episodes. So I'm just going to say goodbye and let that be it.
Bye. Lighters.
Bye.